It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 280. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, got a big episode here for you as we're going to recap a pretty rough week of Phillies baseball. They had a rough road trip in Colorado and in New York taking on the Mets, but they do head home to Philadelphia for a weekend series against the Marlins on a high note as they managed to win the series finale against the Mets. They lost two out of three, but they do win that final game in a very interesting fashion, so we're going to break it all down for you here. Coming up, the Phillies have a new enemy, and they are the New York Mets. It's good to have a rival once again. We're going to get into some stuff with the pitching staff, Vince Velasquez. We'll talk a little Zach Eflin. We'll get into some Bryce Harper stuff, as well as go around the league, give you a quick minor league report. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But I will be guest-free this week here on the podcast, just you and I talking about the Hometown Nine. But just a reminder, if you haven't done so already, gang, if you subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, but you haven't left a 5-star rating and left a review yet, I would ask you to please do that. That does help other Phillies fans find the podcast, helps us out tremendously. You could also subscribe to us on Spotify or wherever else it is that you get your podcast. And also check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. We have some bonus content up there as well, as many of you already know. Just go to patreon.com/hittin'season to get all of that. All right, so let's talk about this series against the New York Mets. And yes, the Phillies lost two out of three, but they are 13-11, tied with the Mets for first place in the National League East after winning on Wednesday night 6-0. And the Mets dominated this series in the first two games. They absolutely looked like the better team after the Phillies had won the two out of three in Philadelphia last week. And so the Mets returned the favor. Hey, gotta hand it to them. The Mets looked like the better team in the first two games of this series, but the Phillies managed to turn it on late in the series finale on Wednesday night, winning 6-0. It was 1-0 going into the eighth inning, but then they scored three runs in the eighth. And then the home run that everybody's going to be talking about on Thursday is Rhys Hoskins' blast against Jacob Rehm. Now, if you don't know who Jacob Rehm is, here's why Jacob Rehm's name is a name that is going to be on the tip of every Philadelphian's tongue and really has been for the last 48 hours. In the series opener on Monday, Phillies pitchers, and I think on Tuesday as well, Phillies pitchers combined to hit three Mets batters. And it was not intentional. Phillies hitters were trying to pitch Mets batters inside. Mets hitters have had their way with Phillies pitching so much of the season so far. But the Phillies are trying to establish the inside part of the plate and hit three Mets batters. The Mets, obviously perturbed and peeved by all of this, decided at the end of a 9-0 game on Tuesday night in the ninth inning to throw at Rhys Hoskins' head. And Jacob Rehm was asked to do this twice. I don't know if he was asked to do it or whether he just decided that he wanted to be a baseball tough guy, and he decided to throw a couple of seeds at Rhys Hoskins' head. The first one he got a warning for from the home plate umpire, and then the second one didn't result in anything except Rhys Hoskins getting pretty ticked off for obvious reasons. You don't throw at a guy's head because a couple of your guys have gotten hit. If it's not intentional, if you don't feel like your team has gotten hit intentionally, then there's absolutely no reason for you to intentionally go after someone else. Now, I feel a little bit differently, I think, and my opinion of this has grown. I don't like pitchers throwing at hitters. The only time I think it's acceptable is if it's being done to protect a player. If it's being done because somebody threw at Rhys Hoskins' head, and you want that kind of nonsense to stop. And let's face it, Rhys Hoskins has had a couple of flights buzz the tower already this year. And it's a thing that's been happening pretty regularly. Now, the Phillies are a team that likes to celebrate the good times. They like to celebrate their home runs when they're doing well. They make a big show of it. And because baseball is played by a lot of childish people, most of them pitchers who don't like being shown up, that generally throughout baseball history has resulted in a hitter taking one in the ear. But baseball's changing a little bit. Baseball culture is changing. That is no longer becoming, by most fans, to be the acceptable way to handle that kind of thing. And so Rhys Hoskins got the best kind of revenge possible. The Phillies didn't have to throw at anybody. Rhys Hoskins got a rematch in the top of the ninth inning on Wednesday night and hit a moonshot two-run home run off Ramey. Off Rame. Hoskins got the ultimate revenge, hitting a booming ninth inning blast, and then my man took 34 seconds to round the bases in a clear in-your-face home run trot. I mean, there was one point where it looked like Rhys Hoskins was just standing still jogging, and you know that felt good. You know that felt good. You know that it was just so satisfying for Rhys Hoskins to get that kind of revenge the night after. He didn't have to wait 2 months for these teams to meet again to do it. He came right out the next night and smoked a two-run home run off this guy, and he made Rame watch him. It was beautiful. It was beautiful, and it was deserved, too. Rame deserved this. Just about everyone accepts the fact that Hoskins was in the right on this, because he was. And Hoskins handled this the right way. You know, listen, you're going to throw up my head and I hit a bomb off you the next night. You're going to watch me take the slowest trot around the mound, around the bases anyone has ever taken. Todd Zielecki noted that Hoskins' home run trot of 34.23 seconds was the longest in Major League Baseball this season, and the first over 30 seconds. The longest Hoskins had previously had was 28.88 seconds. StatCast measures everything. And I think, you know, some of this stuff is pretty useless, but here for once, timing a home run trot actually paid off. Now, there was talk before the game, of course, that there might be some fireworks, but despite both teams getting a ridiculous warning after Vince Velasquez hit Frazier with a 1-0 lead as Frazier was leading off the fourth inning, that's not a spot. If you're going to get some revenge, if you're going to retaliate, you don't hit the leadoff hitter in a game in which you're leading 1-0 in the fourth inning. The umpire's got to have a little bit of sense. He's got to think before he does something like that and realize there's no way. I know that everybody's tense. I know that everybody's on edge, but there's no way that he was throwing at Frazier at that particular situation. But Todd Frazier, you know, he's a veteran player. I think he would have understood as well. But in this case, the umpire overreacted. He had no feel for the game, and warnings were issued to both teams, but nothing happened after that. Nothing happened after that except Rhys Hoskins taking 34 seconds to round the bases after his two-run home run. And that honestly, that made this whole series worth it. I know the first two games of this series were torture. They were just brutal. Two brutal games. And we're gonna get into the first couple games here in just a second, but they truly were terrible. But this at least gets them on the flight home in a good mood. Everybody's going to be talking about Rhys Hoskins' home run trot, the getting the last laugh, leaving Citi Field. That's a lot of times a team will lose a series, but if you get the last laugh, it almost feels better than if you'd won the first two games but suffered a crushing defeat in the third game. You know, there's a little bit of momentum that hopefully the Phillies will take into their weekend series here against the Marlins. But these two teams will play 13 more times this year. They won't face off against each other for another 2 months or so. But these games are going to be wars. And it is awesome that this rivalry is starting to get a nasty edge to it. I love it. I love that because the Phillies and the Mets, for so much of their history, have never been good at the same time. It happened in the 2007-2008 seasons when the Phillies got the best of the Mets in those two seasons in historic fashion, as we all remember. But these two teams, as well as the Nationals and the Braves, are going to be battling it out in the National League East all season long. All of these teams are not too far away from 500. And these guys are they're going to be fighting each other all season long. And so the fact that this has all set up the next 13 games and this summer, every time the Phillies play the Mets, there's going to be this tension. There's going to be this. This wait and see, get your popcorn type theater involved to these games. The Phillies have needed something like this. The Phillies have needed an enemy for a while. Really, when you think about it, who have you hated these last few years? You really haven't hated anybody because the Phillies haven't been relevant enough or good enough to have a true rival, to really hate anybody. Now we have a team, the New York Mets. We have a team to dislike. We have a team to hate. We have a team to loathe. We have a team to point our fingers at and saying, I hate you guys. And that's the New York Mets. I pity any Phillies fan married to a Mets fan or a Mets fan married to a Phillies fan. I mean, obviously, if you, our friend Ellen Adair, who was on the podcast last week, mentioned that she was married to a Mets fan, that's going to be a tricky situation tonight. I mean, listen, we don't take these things seriously. This isn't war or anything like that. It's athletic competition. It's all in good fun. And when we say we hate a team, it is meant in jest, I think, in fun for the most part. But I really don't like the New York Mets. I really don't like that baseball team. A big part of the reason why I don't like the Mets is that they are really good. The Phillies have split the series so far with the Mets 3-3. Each team has won three games. The Phillies have a +4 run differential, if I'm remembering the math correctly. So the Phillies have the upper hand, at least at the moment. I thought through the first two games of the series, it looked like the Mets had the better team, and I'm not so sure the Mets don't have the better team right now. But at the moment, I think these two teams are just pretty much neck and neck. And so part of the problem the Phillies ran into in this series and in this road trip as a whole, in which they only managed to go 2-5 in this really tough 7-game stretch, is they've had some injury issues. They have been without Scott Kingery. They've been without Gene Segura. They've been without Odubel Herrera. And that has really hurt the team. And really losing these guys has hurt them more than it really should have. When you still have a lineup of Andrew McCutchen and JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper and Rhys Hoskins and Michael Franco and Cesar Hernandez, you should be able to still put up some runs. But the Phillies, going into the series finale against the Mets, the offense had an OPS of just .636 over the previous 7 days, which includes the Colorado series in the first two games of the Mets series. That was 24th in baseball. Over the previous 14 days, their .707 OPS ranked 23rd. So this is an offense that has not been feeling it. I know losing three guys, two of whom are your starters, definitely hurts, but this was supposed to be a deep lineup. And frankly, there were supposed to be some guys who could fill in. Scott Kingery, unfortunately, totally sapped them of shortstop depth, which is why you had Phil Gosselin playing shortstop for most of the past week. And Sean Rodriguez got called up, and you know he was fine, but nobody's gonna be scared of Sean Rodriguez. He was in the starting lineup on Wednesday night. It was, you know, he was okay, but you know, didn't do much. But you know, it's the Phillies have been a little bit shorthanded, but teams have to find a way through this kind of stuff. And the bench has just been staggeringly bad all year. Aaron Altair has been brutal. Nick Williams hasn't played. Roman Quinn has been terrible, and I'm going to get to Roman Quinn in just a second. It looks like he's going to be out for a little while. And yes, you know, Andrew Knapp has been terrible. Phil Gosselin having to step in. You know, it's just, you know, Phil Gosselin's not supposed to be in the big leagues. You know, he's just not. He's not supposed to be a big league shortstop, and so we kind of saw that this past week. But the heart of the order simply has not gotten the job done this week until the game on Wednesday, and that didn't happen until late. I mean, so let's go back and take a look at Monday and Tuesday night, which were as bad as it gets. They lost by a combined score of 14-1 on Monday and Tuesday night. On Monday, Jake Arrieta called the team out, and Harper got tossed in the game. It feels like eons ago, doesn't it? But the thing I took out of that was I thought it was just good to see Gabe Kapler get fired up. I can't believe Kapler didn't get kicked out of the game. As pissed off as he was, it was incredible that he didn't get thrown out of the game. But the fact that Bryce Harper did get tossed, we don't know what Harper said from the dugout, but it was enough to get him tossed from the game. And Arrieta did not take too kindly to losing his right fielder. He said, you know, Harper's got to be smart enough. I need him out there. He said something along the lines of, I need my guys to be there behind me. And everybody was flat. I didn't have a problem with Arrieta's comments and calling out his teammates. You know, I would have liked it if he used a little bit more we and not as much those guys didn't play well behind me type language, because it has a feeling of just kind of tossing some guys under the bus. I hate that expression, but really there's really no other way to say it. But at the end of the day, this is a veteran team that's supposed to win now, that has good players on it. I'm much more okay with Arrieta's comments this week than I was what he said last year when he went after Scott Kingery, who was a rookie playing shortstop, making a mental error. and for criticism of defensive shifting when he himself had not been pitching good. Jake Arrieta this year is pitching well. Not perfect, but his defense let him down in the first two games of this series. That was a big problem. The offense was brutal. They tallied just 3 hits in their loss against Steven Matz on Monday. Remember, Matz is the guy that couldn't retire a single Philly, allowed the first 8 guys he faced all to score. And then after Arrieta called them out, they got bullied by Zach Wheeler in a 9-0 blowout loss. The offense pounded out just 5 hits in that game. And listen, I get Zach Wheeler looked really good. Zach Wheeler looked amazing in that game. And maybe any offense would have had serious trouble with Zach Wheeler in that game. Even if the Phillies were at full strength and humming on all cylinders, it's very likely they would not have been able to do much against Zach Wheeler. So I'm not going to be too tough on the Phillies for that loss, but just the listlessness on Tuesday. Committing 5 errors in the field. The infield defense has been no better this year than it was last year, and it was a disaster last year. Cesar Hernandez had a terrible week in the field and on the base paths. I mean, I knew this team was going to miss Gene Segura, and I knew that Gene Segura brought a lot to the table, but I didn't think he brought this much. I mean, is he really the key to the entire lineup? I mean, the starting rotation wasn't bad this week. Eflin's outing on Tuesday aside, the rotation, they haven't been great, but they weren't terrible. Their 4.14 ERA over the last 7 days heading into Wednesday was 17th in the majors. Their 4.79 ERA this season overall is 12th worst, so the rotation has been a problem. But we're going to get to Vince Velasquez here in just a second. Those numbers I just mentioned did not take into account Vince Velasquez's performance on Wednesday. And so you look at what the Phillies might do here as the season moves along. I think they're going to go out and get a starting pitcher. I think they're going to look at Madison Bumgarner. I think they're going to look at Robbie Ray. I think they're going to look at Mike Minor, Alex Wood when he's healthy. I think Tigers left-hander Matthew Boyd would be an interesting target, 28 years old. He's been great this year, 11 strikeouts per 9, a little over 2.5 walks per 9, 3.16 ERA and a 2.41 FIP in 31 and a third innings so far this season for Boyd. So not sure what he would cost, but that could be another potential avenue. And of course, Dallas Keuchel is still out there, but I just don't get the sense the Phillies like Keuchel all that much. So I'm not anticipating anything there, but I will say, Vince Velasquez has given this team a lift. And I wrote a piece before the start of the season in which got a little bit of criticism because I made the point of noting that Velasquez was not terrible last year. He had some moments last season where he was actually much better than anyone remembers. He had a stretch of games where he was a decent starting pitcher. He had a couple of blow-ups here and there, but for the most part, he was pretty consistent. And on Wednesday night, he was very good. Wasn't a phenomenal performance. He wasn't able to go deep. He went 5 innings, threw 97 pitches in those 5 innings, but gave up just 3 hits, no runs, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts. And it was his first victory against the Mets since 2016. Velasquez has not allowed more than 2 runs in any appearance this year, and he has 28 swinging strikes in his last 2 starts. He got into trouble a bit here on Wednesday night, but managed to wiggle out of it with strikeouts. The high cheese was getting Wilson Ramos. Poor Wilson Ramos couldn't handle Vince Velasquez's high fastball tonight, but there were a bunch of players who couldn't. And after getting skipped in the rotation the first two times through, you could say that Velasquez has been their best and most consistent pitcher so far, with a 1.99 ERA through 22 and 2/3 innings. So that's a bit of good news. Now, again, it's what is it? 4 starts for Vince Velasquez. We need to see more. But Velasquez has looked very, very good, very composed, very professional out there, looking like he belongs in the starting rotation. I mean, did you really think that Velasquez would outlast Nick Pivetta in the starting rotation this year? I sure didn't. I don't think anybody did. Getting back to the offense here. And one player in particular, Bryce Harper, has had a very interesting season here so far for the Phillies. He got off, of course, to a phenomenal start. He had a couple of big in-the-moment moments against the Washington Nationals and in the opening series against the Atlanta Braves. But Harper's been a little bit up and down. A little bit feast or famine so far for the Phillies. Not a lot of consistency from him. In the game on Wednesday night, in 4 out of his 5 plate appearances, he either walked or struck out. He did have a big RBI double in the first inning that gave the Phillies their 1-0 lead, and that was a great thing to see, Harper hitting a line drive someplace. But in 108 trips to the plate this year, he has either struck out or walked in 53 of them. 53. That's nearly half. 53 out of 108 trips total, nothing has happened with him at the plate, either a walk or a strikeout. The strikeouts are a little bit concerning, and it's still very early in the season, and Harper is having a very good season for the Phillies, but in those 108 plate appearances, he has struck out 31.5% of the time so far this season. That is a lot. It's a lot of Ks for Bryce Harper, and coming into Wednesday, you look at some of his numbers, they're just a little bit mystifying. He has a 63.7% contact rate overall, which is far below his 74.9% career mark. It was 71.1% last year, which was his career low. I mentioned that he's got a 31% strikeout rate so far here this season. Last year it was 24.3%, and for his career he has a 21.3% strikeout rate, 10% higher so far this season. Which again is, you know, guys can be successful swinging and missing at pitches, but it's not a habit that you want to get into. And he has been swinging and missing at a lot of pitches. He's missed a ton of pitches outside the zone this year, making with a contact rate of 42.4%. That's down from a career level of 60.6%. And in the zone this year, again, this is coming into Wednesday, he has a contact rate of 74.1%, down from 79.6% last year, and 84% in his career. Again, 10 points lower than his career numbers as far as making contact on pitches in the strike zone. He's also having trouble catching up to heat. Baseball Savant says he's faced 77 pitches coming into Wednesday at 95 miles an hour or higher, which is about 19% of the pitches that he's seen. He has 4 hits off those pitches. He's put 3 others in play that were outs and has swung through 20 of them. So 20.5% of pitches that he's seen 95 miles an hour or higher, he has swung through them and taken 8 of them for called strikes. So let's compare those numbers. If you look at Rhys Hoskins, he also has, he has just 3 hits on pitches of 95 miles an hour or better, but one of them was a homer, but he's only whiffed on 9 of those 83 pitches, whereas Harper has whiffed on 20 of the 77 pitches that he has seen at 95 miles an hour or better. So Harper has just not been able to catch up to the high heat so far this year, and you know, how worried should you be about that? Probably not terribly worried because, again, it is still very early in the season. But at the same time, these are some of the reasons that Harper is having a little bit of an issue right now. And, you know, Hoskins, by the way, and the rest of the lineup has simply just not been barreling up the baseball this year. They're letting too many strikes go down the middle of the plate. The plate discipline has been decent, but as of late, the walk rate has plummeted, especially over the last 7 games. And sometimes you need to adjust. Pitchers realize that Phillies hitters were just going to wait them out. They weren't going to get aggressive early in the count. Gene Segura aside, and Michael Franco is a guy who also can be aggressive early in the count. But with Gene Segura out, you've got a bunch of patient hitters in the lineup. Scott Kingery also is aggressive early in the count, but everybody else is patient. And pitchers started realizing again that you could just pump in strike one against these guys, and pretty soon, Phillies hitters were starting off 0-2 in the count, just about every plate appearance. And as we saw with Scott Kingery last year, and we saw with so much of 2018, starting behind in the count 0-2, 0-1, whatever it might be, starting when you get a first pitch strike thrown against you, that it is really hard to do anything productive in that plate appearance. Evan Wins of The Good Fight had a great piece on how teams have adjusted to the Phillies that was out on Wednesday. In the first 17 games of the season, the Phillies walked 12.6% of the time. In their last 6 games, again, coming into Wednesday, 8.1%. They had a 21.8% strikeout rate in the first 17 games, 25% in the last 6 games. And the on-base percentage in the first 17 games was .354. Coming into Wednesday, it was .300 in the last 6 games heading into Wednesday. This is just an issue. This is a problem. Barreldelphia, you know, that was a thing that Phillies fans, Phillies players wanted to make a thing. This is not Barreldelphia. The offense is not doing well. At some point, again, and it's too soon to make any grand proclamations about anything here in the 2019 season. This could just be a bad week of offense, a bad couple weeks of offense. But at some point, somebody's going to have a conversation about what John Maley's doing with this offense. Now, a lot of these guys are veteran hitters. They've been doing this for a really long time. And I don't know that John Maley's doing much to change anything Bryce Harper's doing or Andrew McCutchen. But McCutchen has been slumping. You've got basically everybody on the team not named JT Realmuto, Michael Franco, and Cesar Hernandez slumping coming into Wednesday. And you hope that the last couple of innings where the Phillies were able to put some things together gets the offense going a little bit. But over these last seven games, and really over the last couple of weeks, it's been a struggle for this Phillies offense. And they've got to figure it out. John Maley's got to get this thing figured out. He's got to get these guys to make adjustments to what Major League pitchers are doing, because they are treating the Phillies differently right now. One of the interesting things that was talked a little bit about on the radio broadcast in Wednesday night's game was some of the struggles the Phillies have had against left-handed pitchers. And this offense, the fact that they were not able to do anything off of Jason Vargas. Jason Vargas is one of the four or five worst pitchers in baseball. He came into Wednesday with a 9.58 ERA in four games and gave up just one run in five innings against the Phillies on Wednesday. It's just unacceptable to not pound this man, especially with the talent that is in the Phillies lineup. Part of the problem is that two of their really good right-handed bats, Rhys Hoskins and JT Realmuto, stink against left-handed pitching. Did you know, and this was mentioned on the broadcast, and Scott Fransky couldn't believe it, Kevin Franzen couldn't believe it, and I couldn't believe it, that Rhys Hoskins is a career 196 hitter against left-handed pitching? That's 236 plate appearances, and he has a 196 career batting average against left-handed pitchers. JT Realmuto, in 456 plate appearances, has just a 246 batting average against left-handers. Much better against righties, 288. This is a lineup that should have pounded Jason Vargas, and they didn't. That worries me a little bit. Again, could just be a momentary slump. I'm not going to get too wound around the axle about it, because we got to see how this team plays as the season goes along. This is also a team that just struggles on the road. We saw that last year with this team. They don't play as well away from Citizens Bank Park. Now they come home, and they'll hopefully get some home cooking, but I think this team still doesn't understand how to get themselves up for road games, how to ratchet up that level of intensity that's necessary when you're playing on the road in front of hostile crowds like Colorado and New York, where you're not going to be able to fill the stands with a bunch of Phillies fans. It's great to be in your home ballpark and feel that energy from the fans and play well at home. And listen, you win enough of your home games, you don't need to win a lot of your road games. But I don't think the Phillies are going to be a team that wins 60 home games this year. All right, it's probably not going to work out that way. So they need to play better on the road. They need to figure out a way to get themselves up for these road games, to have the intensity that Jake Arrieta was calling for on Monday, because he was right. This was a flat team. It was a flat team in Colorado, and it was a flat team coming into New York. I will also say, and I got a little bit of flack about this online on Wednesday when I mentioned it on Twitter, but the Phillies are in the middle of playing 17 straight days in a row. Playing a game for 17, imagine you going to work every day, even if you had just come off like a vacation. Let's say you'd just come off of a 3-month vacation or something like that. And in your third week back to work, your boss asked you to work 17 days in a row. I don't care how much rest you got in the 3-month vacation that you had just had. I don't care how early in the season your work season was. If you're asked to work 17 days in a row, you're going to be tired. Especially guys like McCutchen, who hasn't had a day off, and Harper and Hoskins. These guys, because of the injuries this team has had, and because the Phillies carry a larger bullpen and a smaller bench, they haven't been able to get these guys days off. I think you're going to see that happen in the Marlins series. I think you're going to see McCutchen get a day. I think you're going to see Harper get a day. I think that's necessary. That's got to happen. Some of these guys need a day off, and that could rejuvenate things a little bit as well. But I saw some ghosts from September of 2018 this week, and I'm glad that on Wednesday night that the festivities at Citi Field seemed to help make those things go away. Now, we did get a little bit of bad news here on Wednesday, and really, this is starting to become infuriating now. Roman Quinn is going to go on the IL again, it looks like. He had to leave the game after a successful RBI bunt single, a beautifully executed bunt. He had to leave the game after being the second player on a double steal because of a right groin strain. He's going to be examined by the team on Thursday, but he just got back from an injury. He cannot stop getting injured. I don't know how they keep Roman Quinn on the 25-man roster. I just don't. First of all, he looked overmatched since being called back up, and we know that he's a better player than that. But he was absolutely brutal since being called up from AAA. And now you basically don't have a true center fielder on this team right now, and you don't have a true shortstop on this team right now with Roman Quinn being out. And if it's Roman Quinn, it's probably not going to be a day-to-day thing. It will probably be a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months. You can't trust Roman Quinn, which is why it's really hard to get rid of Nick Williams or Aaron Altair right now, as bad as they are, unless you're going to go out and trade for somebody, a better bench piece. I don't see how you can really get rid of either one of those guys right now because you just can't trust Roman Quinn. You can't trust he's going to stay healthy for you. It's a real shame, too, because there's so much talent there. But unfortunately, I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see how Roman Quinn stays on this team moving forward. You've got to have somebody you can depend on. You can't have a guy out there for 2 weeks and then get hurt every single time. It's just, it's unfortunate because Quinn has a lot of talent, but he just cannot stay on the field. Some other news and notes. The Phillies made some roster moves before Wednesday's game. Eniel De Los Santos replaces Drew Anderson on the 25-man roster. Anderson pitched four innings on Tuesday night. De Los Santos has the potential to be a really good bullpen arm. He was in the AAA starting rotation, but he might stick around while Victor Arano recovers from his injury. The Phillies DFA James Pezos. We didn't even know you, James, to make room for De Los Santos on the 40-man roster. And the Phillies recalled Sean Rodriguez from AAA. He got the start at shortstop on Wednesday night. The fourth different player the Phillies have started at shortstop so far this season. And, folks, it's April 24th as we record this. Truly not part of the plan. They did get some good news on David Robertson. Corey Seidman reports that he's doing well as he recovers from a flexor strain in his arm. He could begin throwing after he's evaluated by team officials when they return home on Thursday, but he's probably going to need a short minor league rehab assignment when he's ready to start throwing, which could be as early as the end of this week or this weekend. So that's good news. Hopefully the Phillies will get David Robertson back and get one more experienced arm in the back of the bullpen. Taking a look around the minors, Spencer Howard and Alec Bohm have emerged as the team's two clear best prospects. Both are off to great starts here in 2019. Bohm has a 974 OPS in 18 games for Lakewood. He's hitting 349, 434, 540 with two dingers and six doubles. He could get a call up to Clearwater here pretty soon. Don't be surprised if he finishes the season in Redding when all is said and done. That's pretty much what you'd expect from a 22-year-old college player. But Bohm off to a great start here in 2019. Spencer Howard really is the top prospect. He's replaced Sixto as the top prospect, has a 2.25 ERA in four starts with, get this, 30 strikeouts and four walks in 20 innings of work. Spencer Howard is going to be a monster. Adam Haseley is not off to an awesome start. 161, 266, 268 this season, but he does have a 12-8 strikeout-to-walk ratio, and he's actually been a little bit better than the numbers would indicate, so I wouldn't be too worried about Adam Haseley at the moment. Mickey Moniak looks lost. Any talk you heard about a Mickey Moniak resurgence has not happened as of yet, and I'm not putting any bets on that. I'm not going to Vegas, and not that they have any betting lines on Mickey Moniak, but Yeah, he's had a rough go of it so far here this season. One name we're hearing a lot about right now is Kyle Doughy, being a left-handed relief option to give the fill someone other than Adam Morgan in the bullpen from the left side. He has a 0.82 ERA in six games so far this year. Doughy does. 11 innings pitched with a 22-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio. 4.1 walks per nine is high. And Matt Winkleman noted on Twitter today, and I think it was a valid point, that if you're expecting Doughy to be like a Sir Anthony Dominguez, I don't think he's quite there yet. He doesn't have that kind of stuff to do what Sir Anthony Dominguez did, but he could probably be a pretty good Adam Morgan-type pitcher, which I think is what the Phillies would be looking for. So I do think we will probably see Doughy at some point here this season, because Austin Davis ain't the... That ain't it, Chief. Dylan Cousins. And finally, Dylan Cousins has just the weirdest slash line of the season. Coming into Wednesday, he had hit a homer in two straight games for Lehigh Valley. He was second in the International League with six home runs. However, he has had... You think Bryce Harper's had an all-or-nothing season? Check this out. In 15 games coming into Wednesday, he was slashing 192 batting average with a 348 on base and a 596 slugging percentage. My man's got a 945 OPS with a 196 batting average. He's walked in 19.7% of his plate appearances, but struck out in nearly 39.5% of his plate appearances. He has just 10 hits total so far this year, six of them home runs, and all but two are extra base hits. Truly, truly a bizarre season so far for Dylan Cousins here in 2019. But I know there's a lot of fans that want to see him back on the big league club because he would provide some interesting power from the left-hand side off the bench, but I think he's where he needs to be right now. All right, so as we wrap up episode number 280 of Hittin' Season, here is your stat of the week, and of course, it has to have something to do with Rhys Hoskins' home run trot, which again, just as a reminder, was 34.23 seconds. Compare that to the home run trot by the rotund Bartolo Colon when he hit his one and only career home run back in 2016. That only took 30.5 seconds. So Rhys Hoskins took an extra 4 seconds to travel around the bases when he hit his home run here on Wednesday night than it took Bartolo Colon to round the bases when he hit his. And folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Please make sure to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. That's where you will get Hittin' Season, as well as Continued Success, hosted by my friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, and The Dirty Inning with Justin Clue and Dr. Trevor Strunk. They have a brand new Dirty Inning out where they chronicle a particularly bad inning from 1995. So again, please give a 5-star rating to the Good Fight podcast feed and leave a review while you're there. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll read the best reviews on the podcast as well. And again, I will be actually on vacation taking the kids to Disney World for the next week. And so Justin and Liz will handle things on the Sunday night edition of Hittin' Season, or they might call it a bonus edition of Continued Success, whatever it is. I'm going to be taking a night off on Sunday night to take my kids to Disney World, but I'll be back to talk some Phillies baseball with you next week here on Hittin' Season. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And again, don't forget to check out the Patreon for Hittin' Season. That's at patreon.com/Hittin' Season. Thanks again, everybody. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.